And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston, Intuitive Soul, clearing a path to divine consciousness. And tonight is one of my, well, favorite guests, and she's actually becoming one of Intuitive Soul's favorite guests because everybody loves to hear what she has to say, and it's Tracy McBurney. Hello, Tracy.
Hello.
So you have a very interesting topic tonight, and I'm like all ears because it sounds like we're going through some more changes. Mm-hmm. And you were talked about last time of how there's a change in healing, and now you're talking about having to change our whole mission statement in life.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that.
Okay, so let's begin there. All right, so I had a huge understanding come not so long ago. I went to see a movie. It was actually a very disturbing movie.
Oh.
Current topic of our time. It was a movie by the name of Food, Inc. And apparently my husband says you can actually watch it for free on the internet. I don't quite know how you do that because I'm not internet savvy, but it is available apparently. Mm-hmm. I watched it in the movie theater because I'm not internet savvy. So I went to the movie theater. Besides, I like the popcorn and all
right,
that stuff.
Right, yeah,
and the company. It was disturbing. It was a disturbing movie. It was disturbing because what I saw is evidence of something that I didn't quite understand at the time, but I walked out of that movie angry.
Okay.
I was really angry. I was angry at what was happening with our food. I was angry at a level of dominance over our food and the supply of our food and the level of dominance that was happening all over North America. Companies putting their hands in places that I really felt maybe their hands shouldn't be in to the level that they were trying to control. I walked out angry. In my head, I was using the word evil. I had fallen back into this mind of good and evil, which is the judgment mind. I confess I was right back there for 24 hours. I was right back there. I was like, that's just evil. What's going on? That's just evil. It took me about 24 hours. And I pulled myself out of that mind and raised my mind back up out of the poison of the judgment. And I just said, okay, it's divine. It's all divine. I forgot. I apologize. Forgive me for forgetting. It's all divine. It's all divine. But you know, I can't see it. I don't get it. It's looking pretty evil from down here. But I'm going to trust that it is. So would you please tell me how this is divine? How is this divine, this level of dominance and control over our food, what's happening all over our nation? How is this divine? Because I know it is. It took about 24 hours for my anger to subside to the point where trickles of truth could actually get into my being. And I heard this really wonderful voice start to talk to me. And it said, Tracy, what you were seeing in that movie is a reflection of the mass consciousness of humanity at this time. This is your choice. You are choosing to live by the mission statement, the living mission statement of our time, which is the living mission statement of science. This has been the living mission statement of science since the 1600s. And humanity as a whole, as a mass consciousness, is choosing to live by this mission statement and not to question it.
Hmm.
And they said, they reminded me that this is the mission statement, and it is the mission statement of science, to learn about nature. To learn and become increasingly knowledgeable about nature for the purpose of dominating it.
Yeah.
We see evidence of this everywhere. What they said is they said, Tracy, people are struggling because people are waking up. They're seeing companies that are dominating. They're seeing governments that are dominating over the people, over their rights. They're seeing it. They're waking up. They don't like it, but they don't know where to go. They don't know where to go. They have nowhere to go. Because there's some part of them in their woken up state that thinks, they can't go back. They can't go back to where they were before, the mission statement of before. And the mission statement of before, which was pre-1600, was the mission statement that the churches adopted, the word being adopted. They didn't create it, they adopted it. And that was the mission statement before 1600, owned by the churches. That was a mission statement that said there was a desire now for humanity, the churches, to understand about nature for the purpose of living in harmony with it. So what we're struggling with now, they told me, is this idea that we can't go back. We won't go back. We won't return back to that mission statement because we don't want to be controlled by the churches. We don't want to be controlled. We don't want our knowledge controlled. And we can see that our knowledge can't be controlled. The internet is evidence to us that knowledge and the acquiring of knowledge can no longer be controlled.
Mm-hmm.
So as we watch how the internet is working, and as we're aware of that, there's some part of us that sinks into this idea that we can't go back. So what they said to me is, Tracy, tell them to go back farther. Tell them to go back farther. Before religion, before Christianity and religions adopted the mission statement that wasn't theirs, tell them to go back. Go back in history, go back to the Indians, go back to the Druids, go back to the Aboriginals and the Australian Aboriginals, go back to these people. These were the people that created the mission statement, that is the mission statement that we need to live by again. And we're not choosing to do that because we don't want our knowledge dominated again, the way the church has tried to dominate it. And we can't live with what we're seeing. Many of us are waking up and seeing that we can't live with what we're doing now. We can't live with the level of domination that is taking over us. So I had this real, I get it moment. So all I have to do is change thousands of people's minds about the mission statement internally that they are connected to in their cellular memory and in their subconscious mind. We just have to change it. And if we can change it in those thousands of people, then their consciousness is changed and they will be asking something different from these companies. So this will either be the collapsing of these companies because they're no longer in line with the consciousness of humanity as a whole, or they will be the restructuring of what I call the evil. And it just seems so simple. It was like, wow, there'd be no fight. There'd be no picketing in the front doors of these companies. There'd be no coming to the front doors of the Canadian government and screaming out loud about Bill C-6 and the fact that you're just about to pass that bill. By the way, I actually don't know if that's the case, but it's in third reading in the Senate and it's looking pretty darn close to being passed. And that will be a violation of our human rights. And most people don't know about it.
Right.
So to understand that I didn't have to do this with a fight, with a sign, with a picket, going to jail, going, you know, screaming and yelling and chaining myself to a tree or chaining myself to a fence, that I could literally help to change the belief systems of the people who were completely unaware that they had a different choice, who were completely unaware that they did not have to go back to a time when their knowledge would be dominated by churches or religions of any kind, that they could literally go back and adopt the mission statement of the past and start to learn about their nature, their neighbor's nature, the nature of money, the nature of the economy, the nature of their country, the nature of this world and all the people in it, the different natures of the Muslims, the different natures of the Hindus, for the purpose of living in harmony with them. And to understand the nature of the animals and all that is here around us. So that's where it began. It has been an interesting road since I had that epiphany moment. Having worked with clients in my office to do exactly that, Some of them have had quite profound emotional reactions to that change when it has been deeply internalized within them. Also, we were talking before the show about the fact that as a result of changing that mission statement within myself, there have been some awarenesses that have come to the forefront, stuff right up in my consciousness that now needed to be released because it had no place within me now that this mission statement had been adopted. And we were talking about it. I call it Homeland Security Operating Systems. I think I have a cat hair stuck in my throat.
Oops.
That's funny. At least it's a little one. I have been playing around with this concept of Homeland Security Operating Systems. I like to work with people a lot of the time when I'm helping them with their belief system changes to understand that our mind works quite a lot like a computer. So after 9/11 happened and it became evident to me that the United States had grown Homeland Security from about six people to a multi-trillion dollar business, I kind of went, well, if it's out there and so readily available to see, then it's got to be in us. Because everything's in us if it's out there. It's happened inside of us first. It's not the other way around. So I thought, well, I'm just going to try that out. So using muscle testing, and a couple of clients that don't mind my doing little tiny experiments like this with them, I asked those questions. I asked it of their unconscious or cellular memory level of their body. And I asked it of their subconscious mind. And in all of these cases, I got, yes, yes, Homeland Security is active and operating. And that became an astounding thing to realize for a practitioner who tries to get into people's heads and into their bodies and really change things that are going on within them. To understand that people would come into my office or anybody's office. They would put $200 down on a table. They'd pay in cash or not. They'd be perfectly happy to do so with a big smile on their face and then realize that as they've done that and I'm testing their body, they're not present in the room. They're not fully present in the room. They're not fully present in their own body. They're not in the right frame of mind that would allow them to make positive changes and integrate them and ground them into their being. Meaning they're not in a conscious, rational, decision-making, conflict-resolving, self-realizing, self-actualizing frame of mind. They're not in a frame of mind that's forgiving or compassionate of themselves or loving of themselves or even knowing that they have the capacity to do that. So if that's not enough, now to add into this mix that somebody would come into my office, dump $200 down on my table, and not only have all of that working against them, but now they have Homeland Security operating systems and files that are literally building walls between us as they ask me for their help.
Wow.
And I thought that was it. I thought that was pretty smart. Wow, that's pretty neat to actually see that. It's pretty, and you know, the clients were kind of like, yeah, you know what? You're right. I am seeing you as friend. Subconscious mind's even recognizing you as friend and ally. And I'm seeing myself as friend and ally today. And there's only the two of us in the room. And why would Homeland Security be operating when there's only friends in the room? So it seemed fairly obvious to people's conscious minds. So we needed to repeat an affirmation that would literally put that down on the ground, put the swords down and the walls down so that we could do the work at a more vulnerable level. And I thought that was it. That's all I needed to see about Homeland Security until I changed this mission statement. And last Thursday, so this is really new, so I don't know where this is going and what's coming next, but last Thursday, because the changing of the mission statement is not that it's not that old for me. So I'm in this learning curve of figuring out what that's going to mean for me and the people that, you know, come into my world. So last Thursday morning, I'm working with a client and I get guided because I just try to like to do what I'm told these days. And I get guided to ask her exactly that. Is Homeland Security active and operating at this time? Subconscious mind answers no through muscle testing. Cellular memory of body answers no. So, of course, I'm kind of looking up going, well, why did you guide me to ask this question if I'm getting no? Is it active and operating? And the divine says, no. I said, then what are we doing? Like, why did you ask me this, to ask this question? And what came was, now we want you to ask another question that has relevance here and teaching for you. Now ask her if there's corruption in her Homeland Security operating systems, as you like to refer to them this way. While I'm kind of dropping my jaw as I hear this in my head. So I do, I ask that question, and subconscious mind says, well, yes, now that you've asked, yes, there is corruption in these systems. They're not active. They're not working against you right now, but yes, there's corruption in them. Body memory, cellular memory, well, yes, there's corruption in them. Yeah, we're clear about that. The divine's very clear about it. There's corruption in these folders and files. And I'm having one of these, oh my God, moments. Like, what does this mean? What does this mean for her? Am I being guided to release this corruption in these operating systems? And the answer was yes. And there's a very simple affirmation when you actually have permission from the divine to do that. And so we did that. And as soon as we did that and released the corruption from those systems, letting the divine recognize what the corruption is, because we clearly have no concept of the full magnitude of the kind of corruption that could be involved in those operating systems within us. So we turn that one over to the divine. We surrender by affirmation to the divine. And then a whole flood of knowledge starts to come in as to how this has been operating against her. And it's still coming in. Like, it's not particularly to her, but the understanding of the far-reaching magnitude of these operating systems. Homeland Security protects your heart. The pericardium, it protects your heart. It is protection at circulation and sexual energy meridian level as far as Chinese medicine is concerned. It protects your body. It protects your world, the world as you know it. It protects your world. Your first world was the world of you and your mother. Your father stood outside of that world. He was a part of that world, but only through your mother's perception of him. Mm-hmm. The first time you actually got to perceive your own father, your own birth father, was on the day that you were born. And by then you already had acquired some of your mother's filters. Homeland Security is the protection mechanisms for the greater world. So our world, as in our children, our husbands, our greater world of our friends, our greater world of our colleagues. It's been very far-reachingly amazing to start to see how this is operating against people. If we think about it, protection is supposed to be in place to really authentically protect us from harm. But what I've seen with these files and folders and operating systems is they do a lot of harm because they're not clear. We do need a limbic brain protection mechanism operating on autopilot within us. We all need it. It's an instinctual autopilot operating system to protect. But we don't need the level of corruption that we have within it. And we don't need so much of it on autopilot. We've got way more protection on autopilot than you might imagine. So I'm actually thinking, I'm going beyond this woman who's the beautiful woman, and I thank her and bless her every day for her guides who came in to tell me this piece. So the man that comes in that night, I'm thinking, this is interesting. I bet you he has this issue, and I bet you it's time to release it. And of course, that was in fact the truth. What we found out for him is that his Homeland Security operating systems, the only thing that they protected him from was love. Oh. The only thing that they saw as detrimental to his being and destructive to his existence was love.
Wow.
The only thing that they would not let in was love. So every barb, every criticism, every stabbing from a friend, every sword that went into his back, it was all welcomed, and it was welcomed with great relief by Homeland Security. In fact, Homeland Security operating systems would beckon for it. But anytime love came, it had big walls and blocks to it, so it could not get in.
Wow.
It was very fascinating to walk this man through this, because the kind of love that he was getting into him is what I call love substitutes. So in order for him to know he was starving for love and desperate for love, and when we're desperate for love, we will create the most incredible love substitutes. We will turn indifference into love, criticism into love, humiliation into love, abandonment into love, rejection into love. If you look at a child who's grown up in a family where those kinds of things are happening in that family, an alcoholic family or just a completely absent mother or father, that child has to turn that indifference, that abandonment, that rejection into love. Far better for him to live, he or she to live in those love substitutes than to wake up every morning with the belief that they are not loved and that there is no love for them here. So that was this man, because real truthful love could not get in through these systems. He had corrupted all of his ideas about love. So the only thing that got into his heart to tell him that he was loved was criticism, abandonment, rejection, humiliation, any one of a number of things that he could twist and turn, that the protective operating systems could twist and turn. It has been a short journey, but it has been a really, really interesting, wonderful journey to understand these protection operating systems that most of us are completely unaware of are operating at a very subconscious level and sometimes at a very cellular level in our bodies. And they do create separation for us. They create separation for us. Like, here are the thoughts since I've changed that living mission statement. How would life be different? How would life be different if we stopped giving a name to this thing that I call God, to this divine matrix that I call God? If we just made an agreement all the way around the world that we would no longer name it, because the naming of it is creating so many issues. Let's just leave it nameless. And in leaving it nameless, let's all agree that we're going to call it love. That we're going to call that we all seem to agree is there, love. Now, how would life be different if you or I had an opportunity to ask this question of every single person on this earth? Do you believe in love? Do you believe in love? Not do you believe in God? Do you believe in Allah? Do you believe there is a God? Do you believe in love? Second question. Have you lost faith in love? Do you trust love? Do you believe in love? Or have the trespasses of this life, yours against another, someone's against you, have they corrupted that for you? Do you no longer know the truth of love? Next question. Do you remember the truth of love? Do you remember what love is? Do you remember what love feels like? Do you believe in love? Do you even care? Do you even care to know the truth about love? Do you even care to remember that? Do you even care to remember what that truth is? Or are you going to live here and walk here on this earth in oblivious forgetfulness of that truth and then just stay in a place of blame, blaming God or whatever you want to call it for the things that have gone wrong in your world and the things that aren't coming and the things that you don't have and the things that are collapsing around you? Do you believe in love? And have you ever asked? Have you ever asked that divine matrix, that love, to bring you that, to return that to you, to return that which you no longer truly believe or trust that you really know? that you really know what love is? Have you ever asked for that to be returned to you? Like, how would life be different?
You know, that these are powerful questions that...
I sound like some sort of philosopher, and I walked out of the philosophy class after the first day at U of T and went, that's not for me. But I think about this a lot. How would life be different? And then if we really started to ask some to the point questions, when did you stop believing in love? Could we sit and talk about that? Can I sit with you for as many hours as it's going to take you to find that moment in your life that you lost faith in love and stopped believing in it and stopped trusting it and stopped knowing the truth of it? Can we sit together until you find that moment, until you heal that moment, and until you return to a truth that's been lost to you? Can we just sit together? You're not alone until you find it, until you heal it, until you make it better and right within yourself. So where would people go? I know lots of people would be in the womb.
Yeah.
They'd be in the womb. I know lots of people would be back on the day that they were born. That's when they lost their faith and their trust in love. When that umbilical cord was cut, when those forceps took hold of their head, when the cesarean cut severed their mother and then severed some part of them at the same time. I know lots of people would have to find their way back to that moment and would need help to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see this as impossible anymore. I see this as some simple questions. Some simple questions that people need to take the time to go explore.
Right. And can we do this on our own? Can we ask these questions?
I totally think you can do it on your own. I absolutely think you can do it on your own. Yeah. But I think sometimes as I sit here, just kind of being with you, yes, we can do it on our own. But lots of the time, we want to do it with a friend.
Yeah.
We want to walk that journey with somebody. We don't want to do it on our own because at the end of the day, we're connection beings. We're not separation beings. So these Homeland Security operating systems do not work for us. They distance us from our true nature, which is the nature of connectedness. As Greg Braden would say, we are all entangled. I love that word. And there's nothing that we're ever going to do to stop being entangled. So best we stop pretending that we're not entangled and accept the idea that we're connection beings and start to look at what are the things inside of us that are separating us from what it is that we truly want, what it is that we truly need to sustain us, mind, body, spirit, heart, and soul. What is separating us from love, the truth of love, and believing in love again? Because it's that separation that's killing us.
Mm.
It's completely contrary to how we're supposed to be and how we're supposed to live as humans. And so, yes, I do think we can do it on our own. But I just think we don't really want to.
Right.
We don't really want to. We want to sit with a friend. Somebody who will understand. Somebody who won't judge us. I mean, really, at the end of the day, I think that was the whole purpose of the ministers and the churches and the priests. They were supposed to be the people that were safe people, the people that would not judge us, the people that we could confess to, the people that we could talk to, because we could not talk to that God, not directly. And we did not believe that that God would not judge us. But if we could just talk to that priest, he wouldn't.
Right.
And I think that is, I think that's a big thing. I think that's a big thing not to minimize. That we really want to sit with people that we can be open to, who won't judge us, who won't judge us, that we can just open up and confess what it is that we need to say or we need to hear or that we need to let go of, because sometimes confession is really just a letting go of something. It doesn't have to be about words. So anyway, these are the things that are getting explored in my office right now, and they're pretty quite unbelievable.
I bet.
Yeah, it's I guess the only other piece that this ties into is Bruce Lipton moved me immensely. I've been studying at great length his Biology of Belief book, because I'm making it one of the textbooks in a course that is coming to the Institute of Holistic Nutrition next fall. Actually, this spring in Mississauga, next fall. And his Biology of Belief book is one of the textbooks we chose for that course, which is the Biology of Belief, Perception, and Quantum Healing. So I've been doing a lot of studying of it. And I got to a place in the book where I really had to sit down and think. And I said, yeah, you know what? This man's on to something. This happened before my epiphany moment of the dominance versus harmony, where he started to talk about humanity's desire to continue to believe that Charles Darwin might actually have held the truth about the theory of evolution. And that if Darwin is then right, and if we are believing it, then we evolve through our capacity to be fitter and stronger than another. Survival of the fittest is what pushes our race and our peoples and our family forward.
Mm-hmm.
So if in fact that theory of evolution is sound and correct, then the way I see it, which I don't think Bruce Lipton actually said this way, but the way I see it, war never ends on this planet.
Mm.
There will never be peace on this planet if that theory of evolution is sound thinking.
Right.
What Bruce Lipton actually brings to my awareness is that there was a scientist about 50 years before Darwin came into the forefront with this theory who also had a theory. And his name was Lamarck. And his theory basically was that the evolution of man, the evolution of all things, evolved through cooperation. Bruce Lipton brings that to the forefront in this Biology of Belief book because he's a cellular biologist. So he starts to look at the evolution of the one-celled organisms to the two-celled organisms, to the polycellular organisms. And he starts to look at, my goodness, this man Lamarck might actually be onto something, because we as humans are actually a huge mass of trillions of cells that have learned to cooperate with each other, and not only to cooperate, but to specialize. So you started with one cell, and now we have specialized cells that are lung cells and heart cells and artery cells and reproductive cells, but it started with one cell. So this is a mass kind of looking at Lamarck's concept and saying, you know what, this man might be onto something, that these cells learned how to cooperate and specialize with each other to grow more complex organisms. And more complex organisms grew more complex organisms as a result of greater levels of cooperation. What I find interesting is in this time, since Bush has left the United States government and Obama has taken over, I've heard this word cooperation many times in the speeches of this man. And I'm not saying that he's got all of it nailed down and that he's not making his share of mistakes, and I wouldn't have wanted to inherit what he has come to put his foot in for anything. I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying it's very interesting to sit back as the observer and see that there's a whole different change in consciousness. The United States was very interested in dominating during those years of George Bush, very interested in that old mission statement of understanding the nature of other countries for the purpose of dominating them.
Mm-hmm.
This doesn't seem to be the same mindset that Obama is coming from. So it could actually be that he's trying to evolve humanity through cooperation, and that he's trying to evolve the United States culture, the humans of the United States, through cooperation.
Mm.
And he's getting a lot of resistance. And yes, he really has tried to find cooperation between the Democrats and the Republicans, and it has been an interesting struggle, as everybody seems to be more interested in dominating. I find it also interesting that you watch him and he's being criticized right now for stepping back and not dominating.
Mm.
Like not dominating the discussions. And really, at the end of the day, I don't know what the real answer is. I mean, he is the president of the United States, so at some point you have to kind of take the upper hand lead. But I think it's interesting that he's stepping back to see if there can be cooperation happening between parties and between people, if there can be discussions happening in all of these places so that some common ground can be found.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I think this is interesting. And apparently, according to Bruce Lipton, there's a whole heap load of scientists that are giving Lamarck's work more credit these days, unburying his earlier research and really starting to take a second look at it.
Wow. So where does that leave us? What can we do now to start understanding, or to start changing, or to start whatever it is that we need to do?
Okay, so first off, my thought is, and like, who am I, right? But my thought is, my thought is that this is already happening.
Okay.
Like, we are already being shifted and changed. Greg Braden is absolutely correct. Like, the Mayans really nailed it in the sense that they talk about Earth's relationship to the Milky Way, and we, in no uncertain terms, are reaching this point very fast and furiously where we are coming right into the closest point of relationship between that center of light of the Milky Way and Earth. There is a lot of light pouring down on this planet right now, and it's looking very dark, and I think it's going to look a lot darker before it looks any lighter. And the reason I think is because you cannot heal what you do not see.
Right.
So the light is actually bringing to the forefront these corruptions within us, within our cultures, within humanity, just like this protection operating system that I speak of. It's coming up to the forefront. So the fact that there is so much darkness here is a reflection of how much more light there is. So to me, you're already getting help. It may be one of the reasons why people aren't sleeping as well as they could, why they're a little unsettled at night, why they have some better nights than others, why they're feeling edgy in the middle of the afternoon, or just feel like they have to take a big, huge power nap for an hour in the afternoon, and they never felt like doing that before. This is all a reflection, I think, of all the twisting and turning, cosmic rays, whatever you want to call it, planetary interference. We're getting a lot of help, which means you don't necessarily have to be in my office or somebody, I mean, come if you'd like to, but you don't necessarily have to be in my office or somebody else's office to get a good portion of the help that you're looking for. And then I really do think there are people here, there are books here, there are people here. They are answering their calling. They are answering their calling to step up and try to explain things to you in a way that will make it easy for you to understand and be less afraid of building a relationship with the divine. So what can you do? Well, one of the things that I teach in my courses, they gave this to me about 5 years ago when I asked. Because to me, everything in the mind is about computers. So I was asking for a more efficient way to change belief systems. I'm a Virgo, so I'm always kind of looking for this more efficient way. And yes, I do struggle with that perfectionism piece, but I'm really getting quite a lot better with this. And so I just asked, you know, I just asked. And I even asked so much as not really understanding computers very well. I'm like, could we just have like a master folder download, please? Like, instead of going belief, 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 one by one by one, is there some way that we can just change a mass amount of it at one time? And what I got was a yes. And I said, well, then how do we do that? How do we do that? If I can see, because I'm aware enough to see, that I suck at creating relationships. I'm bad at it. I am creating relationships that are not meeting my needs, that are abusive to me, that are violating my boundaries, and I haven't done it just once. I've done it 5 times. And I am no longer interested in blaming God or anything divine. This is me. This is me. I'm doing this. I clearly do not know how to create good relationships, honoring, respectful relationships and loving relationships in my life. And I am willing to admit it. I am finally willing to admit that I suck at this. So now what are you going to do? Now that you're willing to confess to that divine, I suck at this and I need your help. One of the ways that you can download into your operating system, into your computer, is a simple phrase, I am ready to remember.
Mm.
It's a way of giving the divine permission, because you have free will. We all have free will. This divine will not interfere in your life until you give permission for that. Until you say, okay, okay. Download something new and more enlightened into my mind. I am ready. So that phrase is a very important phrase. I am ready to remember. From the affirmations that I gave you, which I still think are on
my website. Yeah.
The beginning is always good. From the spark of pure love and light that resides within me, I connect to source and I give thanks. It's always good to begin at some ways. I notice I said source. I didn't say anything that would be a reference to any religion. I like to kind of keep it that way. I connect to source and I give thanks. And now I declare, I am ready. I am ready to remember. I am ready to reclaim. I am ready to reestablish within myself your divine enlightened upgrades. Kind of like Microsoft, it took a while to get there. Your divine enlightened upgrades for creating relationships in my life, for creating love relationships in my life, for creating partnerships in my life. I don't know how to do it without you. I don't know how to do it without you. I surrender this to you. Surrendering is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Surrendering doesn't mean the giving up concept or paradigm of Winston Churchill.
Right.
But it is interesting, because apparently my grandmother told me about 3 or 4 years before she passed away that she handed us this family tree, which is hard for me to read. But she tells me that Winston Churchill is in our family background, as is Eleanor Roosevelt on another side of our family. And I'm going, whoa. To me, I think I always felt a disloyalty to this connection, which is why surrendering became such a difficult thing. What they told me in the shower is, I get told a lot of really cool stuff in the shower. What they told me in the shower when I was struggling with this was the level of surrendering that the consciousness could accept at that time was the right surrendering for the time, was the right knowing for that time. And now it is time for the consciousness of humanity to understand a higher level of understanding about surrendering. It is time for you, Tracy, to understand a higher level, a more enlightened way of seeing surrendering. And it was like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So surrendering, it doesn't mean I'm giving up the war. But you are kind of giving up the war. You're giving up the war inside of yourself.
Right.
It means I'm giving up on the arrogant idea that I know what I'm doing. And that I have the right answer and that I know what to do. Because clearly after 5 bad and abusive relationships, I don't know what to do on this topic. I might be very smart when it comes to money. I have $1 million in my bank account. Until it all was lost a couple of years ago. But I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to create good relationships. So I'm surrendering this to you. I'm joining forces with you, divine, because up until this point, all I've done is joined forces with my own arrogance. I joined forces with my ancestors, who clearly didn't know any better than I did. I've joined forces with my mother. I've joined forces with my father. I've joined forces with all of this input here in front of me in an east-west relationship. But I need to have a north-south relationship with you and hear what you have to say. Because I've never asked you. I've never asked you, Divine. I'm ready to remember what you have to say. So we go back to that shack book, the one piece of that shack book that I have not been able to let go of, that idea that one of our greatest problems is that we have worked so independently from that source, that we are in such a mess financially and otherwise, things collapsing all around us because we have worked so independently from our source of pure love and pure light. And that must be because we don't believe in love anymore. It must be because we don't believe that it is the most powerful force in the universe. It must be because we stopped believing in its power. It must be because we started to judge love.
Mm-hmm. Because we've only known the conditional love. We've only known, you know, a love that is... well, conditional, but it's not the purity of love. It's the filtered love.
Right. The love substitutes.
The love substitutes.
Yeah. And the filtered love. Nice way of saying it. Yeah. The filtered love. We've known the filtered love. But have we really known the love? The love without control. The love without dominance.
The love
without needing to be right. The love without manipulation. The love without agenda. Do we know that love? And if we knew that love once, how long did we know that love before it was gone and turned into something else?
Yeah.
Yeah. So actually, that's kind of what I say, is we've lost connection with the belief that love could actually exist here on this planet in an unconditional form. We don't believe it. We don't believe it. And if we believe it, we believe that it can exist here on this earth for just a very short period of time.
Right.
Maybe I get that unconditional love until I'm about 1.5. And as soon as I can open my mouth, as soon as I have my own opinions, as soon as I'm speaking full sentences, gone is the unconditional love. As soon as I want to do something that differs and is different from that direction that my mother wants to take me in or my father wants to take me in, gone is unconditional love.
Wow.
And I just don't think we believe in it.
We
can't connect to it. We can't comprehend it. In fact, when it gets to be that lost within us, the phrase I use in classes is, you've lost cellular frequency memory connection to it. If we opened up a dictionary and we looked up unconditional, it's not in your dictionary. There's no definition for it. There's no operating system for it. There's no program for it. It doesn't operate within you. You don't compute it. You don't understand it. You might use the word. You might read it in a book, but you don't get it. You don't get it. You've never had it. And it's not just unconditional. It's any word. It's any word. And the ones that I find the most interesting in my office are when clients do not have connection, cellular frequency connection to a particular emotion. So the woman that comes in despondent into my office 3 or 4 times over a period of a year and a half. And then finally I hear a little voice from her when I said to her, you know, when I said to this woman, you know, you don't have hope. That can be affecting thyroid. Let's go check thyroid. You don't have hope. You've lost hope again. You're always losing hope. This is about the 4th time we've dealt with this issue in the last year and a half. You're always losing hope. And I'm asking in my head to the divine, why? Why? Why is she always losing hope? Why? Why? What's going on here? And I heard this little voice from inside her say, Tracy, I can't make it. I can't make it. I don't know how to make it. Any emotion is a protein chain of chemical. Neuropeptides and neurotransmitters. So what this little voice inside of her was saying is, I have the proteins, but I don't know how to put them together in the proper form to make that chemical. So I don't make it. I don't have the program or the recipe to make it. I don't have the entitlement to make it. My family lineage doesn't make it. There's nothing that gives me permission on my mother's side of the family to make it. So I don't make it. I don't question that. That's the condition that I live in. That's the condition. I don't practice unconditional love. You don't have that here on earth. I practice the conditional love and I comply with the condition in my family lineage, which says for the last five generations, we don't make hope in this family on my mother's side of the family, and I'm her child. There was a huge understanding that day for me, because I started to see it. We'd fill her up with hope during these sessions. We'd fill her up with hope. She was so filled up with hope by the time she left. And how long would that last? Months? Months, maybe. 2, 3, 4 months before it would start to dissipate. So then I asked her point blank, and she said, oh yeah, she has some friends. She has some friends that make hope. They're her hopeful friends. And I said, do you get filled up from those hopeful friends? She kind of looked at me like, what a curious question. Then she thought about it and she went, yeah. Like when I need a hit of them, we go out. I hadn't thought about that. I do. It's like they fill up my tank and then I'm good. But they've been really busy. They've been really busy. And then she got really sad, a really sad look on her face. Like she started to realize, I'm back in your office, Tracy, because they've been busy. They've been busy and I don't know how to make hope. Wow. So we rewired it. We rewired it in her head and in her cellular memory of her body, giving her permission to access cellular frequency memory for the understanding of what hope is for herself. And then giving her permission to go beyond the programming of her family lineage, to no longer see that that was a disloyalty or a dishonoring to the family, and realizing that she was to evolve the family in this way, that this was her spiritual commitment to evolve the family out of this blockage, to no longer make hope. I sometimes don't know what the end result of some of this work is, but what I can tell you is it's, 2.5 years now, and she's never been back.
Oh. Wow.
And I hear from several people that have come into my office that were referrals from her that she's happy, that she's sorted, that she's doing well. But again, long story, but interesting, because that's an example of the conditions that we comply with in our family lineage that we don't question, that are operating subconsciously and at cellular memory levels. We don't think we can change them. Like the alcoholic, the person born into an alcoholic family who's sugar sensitive. Interesting book. Potatoes Not Prozac. Great book this woman wrote. Kathleen Desmaisons. She nails it in this book. That if you have alcoholism running in your family, the chances that you have sugar sensitivity running in your family are huge.
Okay.
So she starts to introduce this concept of beta endorphin, a hormone that can be low in people that are in families of alcoholics and in history of families with alcoholics, that they have an incapacity to make large amounts of beta endorphin. So they actually eat sugars and drink alcohol, which is a sugar, because it actually makes this chemical. And the beta endorphin hormone, get this, the beta endorphin hormone is what brings confidence to us and a higher sense of self-esteem. So it actually is valid that a person who is an alcoholic drinks alcohol and feels more confident and has a higher level of self-esteem. It's because there's more beta endorphin operating in his world. But I looked at this after I read the book, and she talked about serotonin levels being down for these people. And of course that makes sense, because if you're eating all the sugar, then serotonin levels are going to plummet, because you're plummeting B6 levels and minerals, and the B6 is what's going to make the serotonin. So that made sense to the nutritionist of me.
Right.
But I looked at this and I went, okay, all right. The person that likes to work with the mind, me,
yes,
looked at this and went, all right, let's go look at some of these sugar sensitive people, including myself, and find out. Are there programs that go back in the family lineage that are telling these people, and that's a condition that they're living by that they don't have to live by, but they're not questioning? Are there programs operating in the minds of these people that basically are telling them, yes, you can make beta endorphin, but you're not allowed to make much. You're not allowed to make much. You can only make this much. You're part of this family and you can only make this much.
And she's using her fingers about an inch apart.
So the alcoholic or the person that now eats all the sugar is eating all the sugar and drinking all the alcohol because they are feeling so lacking in self-esteem and confidence that they have to pull themselves out of that mess. But as they do that, they feel guilty, not just because they know that they're eating these things that are not good for them out of balance, but because they feel on some level internally that they are betraying and being disloyal to their family, to what was their little inch of beta endorphin that they could make in this family.
Right.
For the last couple of years, it has been a very interesting journey to work with several of these people that have alcoholism in their family lineage and that have sugar sensitivity in their world. To really just see, can we rewrite these programs? What's the long-term effect of the rewriting of these programs? Does this start to change the behavior? Does this start to make more beta endorphin in these people without the need for the sugars and the alcohol? In other words, they're medicating poor self-esteem and lack of confidence. They can't connect into the world. We're connection beings, not separation beings. They're just trying to connect. And as they drink the alcohol, and they drink the alcohol, and they drink the alcohol, precisely the thing that they think they need to connect is exactly the thing that's separating them out of the family. It's sad. It's sad. It was a very powerful book to read. So again, this idea of the conditions buried inside of us that we do not question. They come through family lineage. We do not question them. They are the conditions that we must comply with because unconditional love is not granted here. And that's a problem. That's a big problem. Because if we could accept that unconditional love is granted here, that it operates here, that it can operate here, that it is our right to have the freedom to know unconditional love, live within unconditional love, receive unconditional love, if we could change those belief systems inside of ourselves, how many conditions have we been living with? How many genetic conditions passed through the DNA strands are we living with? Arthritises, cancers, are we living with that we believe we have to comply with because we're in these families? That we have to expose that gene, as Bruce Lipton would say, that we have no choice but to expose that gene. When the time is right, that sleeve will come down and we'll expose that cancer gene and we'll start replicating that cancer gene because we have no choice. It's a condition that we must comply with to live in this family and to be one with this mother and one with this father and one with that ancestral lineage because we are connection beings and we want connection and we don't want to lose our family. Isn't this wild?
Yeah.
Isn't this just a head trip?
Yeah.
To see what we're doing to ourselves. And how would life be different? How would life be different if we could change the belief system inside of us to accept that unconditional love is granted here? It is available here. It's granted here. It is for you. It is for me. It is for all of us. We can have it. We can know it. We can live it. We can breathe it. How would life be different?
So I'm ready to remember?
I am ready to remember. I am ready to remember cellular frequency because you might not have it, cellular frequency memory. I'll do it slowly because maybe I should just put it on the website for you. I'm ready to remember. So let's start from the beginning. From the spark of pure love and light that resides within me, I connect to source and I give thanks. And from this place of oneness, connection, purity of heart, pure love, pure light, love unconditional, and grace, I now declare. I am ready to remember. I am ready to reclaim. I am ready to reestablish within myself first the cellular frequency memory for the word and the power, unconditional. The entitlement to the use of this word and the utilization of this power. Thank you for your help. Now I declare I am ready to remember. I am ready to reclaim. I am ready to reestablish within myself. Your divine enlightened upgrades for unconditional love, for my entitlement to know it, to live in it, to utilize it, to learn about it, to allow it to grow within me. I release all blocks, reversals, resistances, without limitation, boundary, or prejudice, to the receiving of this wisdom now, to the integrating of this wisdom now, to the accepting of this wisdom now, and the following of your ways. Now and forever, in all time, all space, all eternity, simply, safely, permanently, painlessly, and peacefully, I accept this change within myself and within my life. I thank you for your help.
Wow. Okay, so we just went over. I can't believe that, you know, I barely said, well, anything other than wow all night. Thank you, Tracy. We really need to get you to come back more often. Yay. And wow. Okay, so we have a show coming right up right now.